Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we have reached the end. The end of the rainbow. The end of time itself. The 12th episode of Season 5, the 76th episode overall, the last episode of the X-Men animated series, Graduation Day.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's your musical exclamation. This is the reward you get for beating E.T. the video game on Atari. A little bloop. Yeah, so this is the very last episode of the show. Not the last episode of the X-Men Task Podcast, as many of you know. We're going to carry on. We have many more movies to get to. We're going to do a whole other animated series or two. We'll see. So don't worry about that. But this, in and of itself, is a milestone for us. We have covered every single episode of the X-Men animated series, or we're about to anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, right up front, I had no memories of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen parts of it several times. I don't think, being an X-Men animated series fan, I ever really had the heart to watch the last episode in full.
I know. Well, you've also, like, said in the past that you never really went through Season 5 again in your rewatching. So.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I feel like I made a mistake. This was a really...
A lot of these episodes are really good.
Yeah.
Like, they're well written and the stories are great. Just, like, the animation kind of sucks, so you don't like the packaging on it and you kind of dismiss it. But
and the animation here, again, is not good.
No.
There's a couple of things, like, when Morph is posing as Professor X, spoilers, it looks particularly awful on a TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
When it looks like the worst drawing that, like, I could have drawn that.
Yeah.
You know, with blue construction paper.
Yeah.
There's a shot of Cyclops where his hairline is exposed underneath, you know, where the side of his mask comes up to the top of his hair there. Like, they drew, like, a fleshy line of skin, like almost like he has a monk haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely an animation error because in the next shot he has all his hair.
Yeah.
So that always stuck out. I remember that scene as a kid. That always stuck out to me.
Really?
As being really galling. Really, though, outside of the animation, it was a pretty solid ending to the series as a whole, touching on a lot of the major themes and paying off a lot of character development.
Does the title of the episode make sense to you?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this goes back to a theme of the show that is never properly addressed. It's Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, but yet they really, really de-emphasize the school aspect in the show.
They barely show it at all.
If ever. I mean, Jubilee is really the only student being trained.
And even so, they don't show any kind of school situation with her. It's more of an apprenticeship, if anything.
Yeah, she's mainly going on dangerous missions or learning how to fly mini jets.
She's mainly being told not to go on dangerous missions
too,
and just wait at home at the mansion for them to come back.
You know, sometimes she cries, like famously in the last episode of Season 1, where she cries to go on the most dangerous mission they had at the time when they had to fight all the Sentinels and said, all right. if anything, they've succeeded at keeping one 15-year-old girl in constant mortal danger for 5 seasons. But yeah, it's not like the movies or the comic books where it's a bustling school of children, some mutant, some human, all learning, and the X-Men are teaching classes.
Right.
So here, calling it Graduation Day, while in theme with the X-Men in general, not really in theme with the show, but an appropriate title to end the series on.
Because it's an ending thing? I mean, graduation implies that you're moving on to something else in life.
Right, yeah.
X-Men
so
or not.
We'll talk about
they're
what
just they're doing their regular life.
Yeah, we'll talk about what they're moving on to at the very end.
Yeah.
We'll see more.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, the title, it feels right, but it doesn't really fit with the show in a sense. But overall, I have to say, this episode, it got to me a little bit. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it was good.
So let's go through it. So right off the bat, you get a classic scene of some social, cultural, political unrest in the world. The mutant problem has not been resolved. Mutants are still feared. Government officials are still concerned, almost violently concerned about the mutant problem. There's a big protest at what seems to be the UN. The establishing shot, it's definitely New York City. At first, it seems like it's Court Street in downtown Manhattan, mm-hmm. with the famous, like, Supreme Court buildings where they film a lot of the Law & Order episodes. But then they quickly pan inside a building, and it definitely looks like the UN General Assembly, which mm-hmm. is in a totally different other part of the city. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I mean, whatever. There's just protests going around New York, presumably around the world. And there's a guy, a mysterious character we've never met before, or have we, giving a summary, a negative summary of the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it turns out this guy is Gyrick. So, I mean, I think his first name is Henry Gyrick. Mm-hmm. And he, the way they have him animated here, they have him as, I guess, a black man. But in the beginning of the show, he was a white dude with sunglasses and like a red-colored crew cut hairstyle and like a green jacket. So he's got the name Gyrick. I mean, it could be a different person. I doubt it. I think they just didn't know how to animate him anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't remember him being so much of a political operative in the show. He seemed more like a military contractor that was working with Dr. Trask to build the Sentinels.
Right.
And start the mutant registration program. So, I don't know. They got a little bit confused here with Gyrick, it seems. But that aside, he does have a pretty interesting summary, which was awfully reminiscent of Captain America Civil War, the movie, where he's like going through the events that the X-Men have been involved in that's caused lots of mayhem and damage mm-hmm. to the world. Mm-hmm. So I wrote them down. The first one he mentions is London 93, which, first of all, that's kind of interesting. I guess the show premiered in the late fall of 92. Mm-hmm. And he's referencing the Apocalypse episodes, the first time we see Apocalypse, which is at the end of season one.
Yeah.
So I guess that might have crossed over into 1993. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's not like the entirety of the first season was in 1992.
Yeah.
Anyway,
That's like a cool internal logic, though, that he's referencing it in real time, you know, like that.
To the air date of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
And they have footage from all the episodes, by the way.
Right.
So, which is kind of weird because the animation, the superior animation is highlighted in these highlight clips
it's on screen, so you can suspend belief a little bit.
So, basically, he references London 93, which I get it that, like, events of that episode took place in London at times. Uh-huh. Like Apocalypse sets out his four horsemen, Archangel, War, Famine, Pestilence. Uh-huh. And I remember them mainly attacking France. And I think we made a big deal about Apocalypse knocking over the Eiffel Tower, which is shown in a later shot for a different event.
Yep.
But anyway, whatever. I just remember that. It's like there was some kind of like world peace conference in France and Apocalypse attacks downtown Paris.
Yeah.
So calling it London 93, okay, whatever. They're maybe perhaps a bit confused there. Then he says, oh, they caused millions of damage. And then he says, and then their mutant asteroid M, slammed into Earth. And they show a shot of Paris in flames with the Eiffel Tower. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
it's just a composite reel of, like, destruction and stuff, right?
Yeah, but
like,
did Asteroid M slam into planet Earth at the end of that two-parter in season four? That, I don't remember that happening. I remember the asteroid being broken up in the atmosphere, maybe, and Magneto was crash-landing it.
Yeah.
I don't, it didn't seem that an asteroid, we would have made a big deal and I would have remembered if the asteroid crashed to Earth. And also, an asteroid crashing to Earth would probably annihilate the entire planet.
Depends on the size of the asteroid.
Asteroid M's pretty big.
But it broke up in the atmosphere, they showed.
Okay, so you think it's just a... Remember the first moments of Armageddon? Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, I remember
It opens where it's like some like asteroid fragments are hitting Earth first.
Yeah.
And I forget what cities they crash into. I think they crash into Paris, actually, maybe. I don't remember fully what, but or maybe it was Hong Kong. They show asteroid fragments crashing to Earth as like the warning,
uh-huh.
and they say tens of thousands of people have died. So maybe it was something like that scenario, where it was the prelude, you know, a breakup of an asteroid into the Earth's atmosphere would cause damage, but not obviously destroy the Earth.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so that happened. Then he also talks about, which is like a really weak reference point. He says, and then the X-Men or the mutants flattened an entire village in the former Soviet Union.
Right.
And they show one of the Colossus Omega Red episodes where Colossus is fighting Omega Red and a small village. Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't that big of a deal.
You know? Well, you know, he's establishing a pattern.
Right, yeah. So he's establishing a pattern. He could have picked, I think there's probably more events from the show's history caused way more destruction and
these
panic.
Are like the rules that they could pull up most quickly and like insert into this animation.
I guess I'm remembering the alien that would like destroy the New York City subway system that the X-Men disturbed. That mm-hmm. was the prelude to the Phoenix Saga.
Yeah, right.
The Phoenix Saga in general, there's a lot of like weird, when the M-Crom crystal is getting close to Earth, Storm had to like fight back a tsunami that was about to like knock out all of Manhattan.
I mean, they could have picked any event from any episode pretty much.
Right.
Like
yeah.
some of them, I guess, were kind of secret, but most of them are not.
Right.
And they all pretty much.
I'm just saying some were bigger than others.
Destruction.
There has to be at least 10 bigger than the apocalypse destroying a small Soviet village. Okay,
right.
Whatever, fine. So he's making a presumably strong argument that mutants really have to be contained. And so therefore he says we have to pass the mutant containment bill. Meanwhile, Professor X has apparently been on the stage with this guy all day, or perhaps for many days, arguing this in some kind of weird filibuster debate. So, because he's like sick and like coughing,
mm-hmm.
and he's fighting back saying, no, we all have to live in harmony and peace, his standard message. And this Gyrick guy like brings up like some interesting like questions that the show left vague that I weren't even sure were ever even brought up to begin with. For instance, he says, you know, Professor Xavier, you're always defending mutants. It seems awfully suspicious to me. Perhaps you are a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings out some kind of TV remote control and turns it on.
Yeah.
And it causes Professor X to freak out. And
I had a lot of problems with this one particular part of the scene.
Why?
First of all, I don't think it's supposed to be a secret that Professor X is a mutant. Isn't that widely known?
I mean, this is like, now we're getting to territory that's quite... it's more vague than I thought it was. I was along the lines with you that... Yeah, it had to be. It seemed pretty self-evident that Professor X was a mutant.
I thought it was known, like, in that was part of his like public persona as a champion of mutants, is that he is a mutant. Anyway.
Yeah. So that's the show, part one, they reveal that no one knew that Professor X was a mutant.
I guess. Part two is, what the hell kind of device is this that this guy has? It seems like the most dangerous device. Like, one of the most dangerous devices in the world, right? Because
right.
all he does is point it at Professor X, and it causes Professor X to, like, spontaneously use his mutant powers.
In, like, a really negative way.
Well, it's not even that it's negative, it's that it's uncontrolled. Like, he's just, like, spouting his,
concentric
like, psychic
circles of
powers,
psychic power.
And he's unable to stop it or,
and
like,
then he,
minimize
like, passes
it.
Out and basically dies, according
to like,
Wolverine.
If you had that, you know, remote control device, right, and pointed it at, like, Cyclops or, like, any mutant, basically,
yeah.
like, destruction is guaranteed, basically, right? Like, why is that the way that this device operates?
I don't know. I mean, I immediately thought the device was going to be one of those things. It looked a lot like the device we see in the X-Men movie Days of Future Past, that what's that actor's name who's Tyrion Lannister? Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
He has that detects mutants.
Uh-huh.
Remember that? He points it. He's in the conference trying to sell his Sentinels, and
yeah.
he, like, points it at a Vietnamese general, and it turns out it's Mystique.
Yeah, right.
He's like, oh, it can detect mutants even in this room.
But detection is one thing.
I know. I mean, that's what I thought it was at first.
Force use of powers is another thing.
Right. So, I agree. And
anyway.
Yeah, and, like, and who knows? Maybe the thing was only... It was, like, fine-tuned only to... trigger Professor X and his powers.
Doubtful.
Right. And Gyrick knows that Professor X is a mutant too, if we're talking about the Gyrick from the early part
Everyone
of the series.
Everyone knows Professor X is a mutant. That's
I mean,
why
apparently
I have such
not. No.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah. So Professor X's powers are triggered. He kind of has a seizure. He passes out. Everyone in the audience has to run away because his power is like crippling or maybe even killing them.
Uh-huh.
Except the other mutants in the room, Cyclops, Beast, and Wolverine are unharmed.
Right. Which also doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, and it also, you know, it seems like it's the same plot device that was used in Logan.
Right.
Where they infer that Professor X had a seizure or something at one point where his powers went out of control and he killed all the X-Men, except for Wolverine, who could handle it because
of
his healing power.
Right, because he could heal.
And so therefore, he has to keep giving Professor X drugs to contain his mutant power,
mm-hmm.
because if not, it's just like runs like
he could just destroy like everyone in
yeah,
his path.
It's like a dangerous dog whistle that just kills everybody listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a significantly different plot device, though, because it's like, here it's triggered on purpose, whereas in Logan it's not on purpose.
I think, like, I might be wrong. I've only seen Logan, like, once in the movie theater, and I really liked that. We're going to revisit it. But there might have been mention that it was a plot, too, that something happened that triggered Professor X to do it.
Oh.
That maybe Wolverine was the... I don't know. Whatever. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But anyway, similarities to Logan aside, the idea that he's, like, killing everyone with his mind, that's kind of swept aside very quickly.
Yeah.
Once the X-Men abscond with Professor X and fly away desperately in the Blackbird, his power stops doing that. So it's not like a danger we have to worry about going forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, Wolverine immediately announces that Professor X has died. He smells him. And he's like, oh, he's not going to make it. It's too late. And Cyclops is like, well, I'm not, you know, we can't take that chance. He's rushing him back to the X-Mansion for a second opinion. And Beast on the Blackbird does a medical analysis saying that his body looks like it's dead, but his brain is, like, fighting to live.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that once some happier mutant powers have failed us, your mutant senses have let us down. So pretty dramatic stuff. I mean, Professor X is on the verge of death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the question is, it's like he seemed pretty haggard there before the guy messed with his brain.
Mm-hmm.
But did the thing, like, kill him, or was he, like, close to dying anyway, and this just pushed him over the edge?
We'll never know.
Right, we'll never know. So, meanwhile, on Genosha Island, which it's referred to instead of just being Genosha, there's a group of mutants in a cave. A lot of them we saw from the Slave Island episode from season one, including Sunfire and Wolfsbane. Who I think is an X-Force character, maybe X-Factor. Anyway, they're watching this all on TV, and they're outraged that Professor X was attacked. And some more, like, good world-building in the last episode, where Sunfire, he's really angry, and he says something along the lines of, Professor X was famous, rich, and good-looking, and they attacked him, and they killed him. And it just shows how vulnerable we are as, like, the freak mutants.
Yeah.
Sunfire himself is actually pretty human-looking, totally human-looking, outside of his crazy costume. You know, he's one of the cool mutants that can just activate his powers and be a normal person.
That's what I thought, too, but the way they drew him here, were those, like, sunglasses or part of his costume?
It's his costume. It's one of his weird variant costumes.
Oh, they, like, made his eyeballs look... Like,
yeah, he's wearing a mask. Like, it's one of it's his less socially, culturally insensitive costumes.
Because
his original costume, I think, from the comics is, like, the Imperial flag of Japan.
Oh.
He might have actually had that in the Slave Island episode. I'll have to check back and see. I don't remember. But anyway, they give him a more, like I said, culturally sensitive the costume there. Anyway, so he wants war. And they sort of, like... The camera pans to Magneto, who's observing all this from a weird mountain fortress, also in Genosha. I guess they're living there now. I guess the whole Genoshian government's been taken care of if the mutants are living there freely, and, you know, Magneto's also living there.
Yeah.
So, and that's a theme that's in the comics big time, too. So Genosha goes from a place of oppression to, like, a mutant, like, haven, and then bad stuff happens there, too. All right, anyway, we'll get more into Magneto later. So Beast, Patches, they're back at the X-Mansion. Professor X is in a gurney. It doesn't look good. Moira MacTaggert is patched in. She says there's nothing her science can do. It looks like he's dead. He's only got like 9 hours to live. Beast has the idea that we have to contact the Shi'ar across the other end of the galaxy for help because maybe their science can save him. The problem is they have no way of contacting the Shi'ar. Only Professor X could because of his special bond with Lalandra. So that's, like, really, you know, the only hope. They asked Jean if she could do it, if she can help. And Jean making a rare appearance in Season 5 here. She hasn't really...
Yeah, she hasn't done much.
Cyclops, too, hasn't really been much.
They haven't done much for us lately.
Yeah. She's drawn quite weirdly, too, in this iteration. You know, I don't know. I mean, she's just got, like bubble boobs, like, like really bizarrely drawn.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she says, that's one trick I can't do, Beast. So...
Right.
At first, it seems like, oh, Jean's useless again, but she's actually a bit more useful in this episode, which is a nice, like, victory for Jean Grey. Meanwhile, Magneto is... he's going to rouse these mutants into war. Finally, he's had enough. You know, it seems like he's been resigned at various times in the series. You know, he doesn't care anymore. He's just going to live in a cold mountain somewhere. You know, he's more interested in his children, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch at times. He's given up. But here he's like back to like, okay, I finally have to fulfill my destiny and lead a mutant uprising. So he starts rabble-rousing the mutants. And we see some more great, like, classic X-Men TAS stuff, like news montages around the world. This time courtesy of Trish Tilby, a news anchor. I just thought that name was ridiculous.
Why?
I don't know. It's very, like, 90s newscaster name to me, Trish. Anyway, I found it funny. So there's a riots in Detroit and Hong Kong. And then they say that the mutants have actually taken over a few cities, too.
Right.
Tehran, Iran being one of them.
Ensenada, Mexico, and Duluth.
Where's Duluth? Is that Illinois or California?
I wanted to say Minnesota or okay. Iowa.
Right, yeah. So Duluth is an American city somewhere, probably in the Midwest. So they've taken over some cities. So the mutant uprising is like in full swing here. You know, the X-Men have a good strategy. They deploy our old pal Morph, who returns in the final episode, which is kind of nice.
It's kind of weird we didn't like see him come back. He just is back.
Well, I mean, we know he's been back a few times.
Yeah, I guess so.
So we know that the last time we saw him, there's like a whole Morph episode. I forget if it's at the end of season 4 or if it's in the start of season 5, where he comes back and he's going to go on a mission with them again, and he
right.
does.
Yeah.
And he actually saves the day, but he realizes it's still too like emotionally overwhelming for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he needs more rest.
Right. It's just weird here that he's just, like, back all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's, like, a nice touch to bring Morph back. He's such a popular character that was specifically created for the show.
Right.
He has a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
So Morph's back. He pretends to be Professor X, and he, like, sends his video message across the world to calm everyone down.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the X-Men have a plot to... They're going to go to Genosha. I'm not even, like, quite sure what they're going to... I guess they're, like, their plan's just to stop Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
And a great moment in the show here where Cyclops goes to Wolverine in confidence, is like, I need your advice. And Wolverine's like, wow, that's a first.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that many times in the show, of the way the other X-Men leadership has dismissed Wolverine as an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
When really, it seems like he'd be the one with the most... experience, intelligence, and wisdom.
Yep.
Because he's lived 200 years as a secret operative and soldier.
Right.
Like, he knows how to do stuff. So that was, like, actually a nice... I like that. That was, like, a nice little...
Yeah, it was cool.
I mean, they don't, like, go into it, like, I need your advice and, like, explain what we just said. But it's enough of a hint that, to me, it looks, like, nice.
Gaining mutual respect.
Right. So they plan to storm Magneto's base. Jean is integral to this plan. You know, so the plan is basically to fly in the Blackbird to Genosha. They have to fight through, you know, what Wolverine describes as several thousand mutants. I guess Jean's plan is that they're going to let Magneto destroy the Blackbird, which he does, and that she's going to use her telekinetic bubble to land them safely on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But Magneto's going to think they died.
Right.
So,
I mean, they do that. It works.
Yeah, and it's nice to see Jean use her power in that way, because it seems like her power of telekinesis is so incredibly, seemingly strong, you would think, that it could have a million and one uses. And in the show, it's, like, barely ever used, except for her, like, lifting some small objects around.
Yeah, I mean, even here, it works, but...
It's not great.
It's, like, a rough landing for them, you know, Wolverine is complaining about it, and it's like, come on, Wolverine, you can, like, jump out of a plane with no parachute. Like, you're fine.
And it's pretty ridiculous to think that Magneto thinks he killed the X-Men in that moment, and that he's totally okay with it.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you were worthy foes, but I guess you're not gonna be part of my future.
Right.
I mean, you know, it goes against a lot of the character building we've seen with Magneto. He's kind of ended up being friends and allies with the X-Men, I feel like, the last time we saw him.
Yeah.
You know, they've saved his butt many times. Anyway, there's also a mention by Jean that I thought was interesting. She says that she was Xavier's first student,
mm-hmm.
Which is definitely not true of the comics. Is typically just not... doesn't ring true for X-Men fans, I think, in general.
Yeah.
The first student... is generally believed to be Cyclops, but I feel like there's been some retcons and some other things along the way. He might have had some other first students, But it's not Jean. Jean's actually famously in the first issue of X-Men from 1963. She's the last team member to join. Mm. That the team is formed. They all have their outfits. They've been training Cyclops, Beast, Angel, and Iceman.
Yeah.
And Jean, like, drives up with her parents, who are alive. We'll get into that more later. Mm-hmm. And she's dropped off at the mansion, and she's the last to join. And she's, like, 15 years old, too, or something, or 16.
Well.
Yeah, so whatever. But so in the X-Men animated series, she's the first to join, I guess. All right, anyway, moving on. So the X-Men, they arrive in this group of mutants where Magneto is giving a speech or something. It's very reminiscent of X-Men The Last Stand,
mm-hmm.
where Magneto's giving a speech in a forest and all the mutants are ready to battle, and
yep.
Wolverine's kind of like going through the crowd, sometimes fighting his way through, other times just blending in,
mm-hmm.
right? Like a lot of X-Men 3 reminiscence in here. But they're looking for a secret entrance to Magneto's mountain fortress, which is a kind of bizarre-looking fortress, don't you think?
It's almost like a Mr. Sinister-type fortress. I guess it's just rock or whatever, like
melted,
stalactites.
Melted stalactites, right? Like
it looks kind of like...
it doesn't look comfortable.
Visceral.
Right.
Somehow.
We've seen many hidden bases for Magneto in the show and in the movies. This mm-hmm. is, like, one of his least inspired.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a whole asteroid in Asteroid M. Sometimes he's got, like, a cool Arctic base with a lot of technology and video screens in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. This is just a creepy cave.
Right. yeah. He's not doing that great for himself. So the X-Men confront Magneto, and they fight him, which I thought was borderline refreshing to see. You know?
Like a good old-fashioned hand-to-hand combat.
With some three classic X-Men, Jean, Wolverine, Cyclops, or Magneto. Like, I don't know how to describe it other than that. I like those characters. I like the colors of those mutants.
Uh-huh.
And I like those matchups. I mean, Magneto, you know, he manages to fight Wolverine off, but really... Wolverine gets closer to Magneto than he should, based on the fact that his whole skeleton is adamantium.
Yeah.
You know, Magneto should be able to fling him into another country
mm-hmm.
or rip out a skeleton, as we've seen in the comic books. But whatever, they tussle around with Magneto, and then they manage to sort of, you know, get him into a conversation where Magneto's like, you know, in honor of Professor X, who's my one true friend, perhaps the only friend I ever had, I'm mourning for him, so I'm going to let you guys live. Get out of my way.
Mm.
And Jean's like, wait a minute, that's the solution. In the fight, Jean comments that Magneto's electromagnetic waves increases her telekinetic power.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind. So Jean says, you know, how much do you love Professor X? And Magneto's pretty outraged at the question. He's like, how dare you?
How can you question my loyalty to Charles?
Or like, something like that,
he doesn't
yeah.
say that exactly, right. but he's implying, like, Professor X is, like, my one and only friend in the whole world.
And he's also, like, he's a character that does not want to be psychologically examined in any way out loud.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't press any of my emotional buttons. I'm an emotional tornado. Like, my entire being is rage and self-hatred and, yeah. you know, like, revenge.
Yeah, but he also says, like, you know, that Charles was, like, his only equal match in terms of, like, a rivalry sort of thing,
right,
I guess.
Yeah.
It's like
the only one he respects, you know.
Right, and that's, like, something that he actually... exactly, that's, like, a characteristic trait that he values, which is, like, kind of a funny thing.
Why is it funny?
I mean, because most of the time in a rivalry, if you see your rival vanquished, you're happy about it.
Right.
But it's like he likes having someone who challenges him.
You know, it's funny. It's a theme they play up big time in the movies, the friendship between Magneto and Professor X
yeah.
and the respect that Magneto has for Professor X.
Yeah.
Like, it happens many times in the show where Magneto will come to the defense of Professor X. Like, I think, and it happens in the movies,
and vice
too.
Versa, you know?
Right. Like,
they're, like, looking out for each other, despite not agreeing and trying to,
yeah.
like, fight each other off and
right,
stuff.
Right, yeah, they got each other's backs in a weird secret way. Like, I remember,
yeah.
I think it's in X-Men 3 where the fire mutant, what's his name, Pyro, says to Magneto, it's like, my only regret is you didn't let me kill Professor X.
Yeah.
And Magneto's like, Professor X has done more for mutants than you and I will ever, like, dream to ever do.
Right,
like,
something.
Yeah, and so that's Magneto at his most craziest, because that's when he's ready to kill, like, the whole world.
Yeah.
And even then, he's defending Professor X. And I think that's, like, a nice... like theme and of the show and the comic books in general is Professor X's Magneto's respect for Professor X
mm-hmm.
and like what do you think the root of it is? Is it that he like he's a, is he in awe of Professor X's power, or because he definitely does not believe in Professor why am I having so much trouble saying his name, in Xavier's dream for harmony and equality and stuff.
Right.
He does not believe, he thinks it's totally naive and foolish.
Yeah.
Yet his respect for him is like completely like endless.
I think it's that Magneto's internal logic is still virtuous. You know,
right.
And he sees himself as a morally good
right.
person.
Magneto's the good guy in his story.
But I think he also recognizes that despite differing points of view, Xavier is the same as him in that way, that he's like a higher moral authority than most other people or mutants. So
right.
it's like they're the same level but on different sides of the coin, you know?
I wonder if, like I said, I wonder if it's an element too of that he has such respect for Professor X's power.
Mm.
Like he, because Magneto is often described as the most dangerous mutant,
mm-hmm.
and yet Professor X kind of fears Charles in a way as well. You know, and we know that.
You mean Magneto fears Charles,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we know that Professor X's power technically is the most ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in any movie or cartoon, it's always just like never in the equation because it's you have no show.
Yeah.
If Professor X is just rolling around in his wheelchair, like brainwashing people or mm-hmm. telling people to like fall unconscious or, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like never really a factor, but it's like a cool element of the comic books in general that Professor X is technically the most powerful character, more powerful than Jean in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I just feel like because Magneto is virtuous in his own way and has all these personal connections with Professor X, like we've discussed in the past, it's fitting that he's the last villain.
Right, yeah, that was
show,
good. It was a good choice.
Know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like all the other villains are like maybe scarier or, you know, technically Apocalypse is more dangerous
right.
than Magneto is.
They've already sort of taken care of Apocalypse
but,
in
like,
the most ultimate way.
I mean, they could have brought him back if they really wanted
they
to.
They did in
to.
Season, we know, but,
I know,
like,
but
in
I'm
a dumb way,
it,
they did. Yeah.
Again, they could have if they really wanted to.
Right.
But I think, like, all of those other villains, there's something,
it doesn't fit
like,
the theme as much as Magneto.
Not non-inhuman about them, like, that these villains are not, like, personified in the way, or that aspect of their personalities is not explored in the way that it is with Magneto. So you don't
right.
see, like, a multifaceted character as much with, like, Sinister
yeah.
or, like, you know.
You bring up a good point. Like, Magneto's multifacetedness is,
mm-hmm.
it's great in the show. The show did so much for Magneto in making him interesting and compelling and sympathetic,
mm-hmm.
Which really changed the character in popular culture, I think, because it influenced the movies deeply.
Yeah.
However, it was also, like, the downfall of Magneto in a way, because in the show,
uh-huh.
because they kind of like they take him out of the equation quickly as far as being the ultimate threat.
Yeah.
Because they sort of humble him in like at the end of season one, and he becomes like their ally right away. And throughout all season two, he's with Professor X in the Savage Land. He's kind of a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like he's not much of a factor in season three. I don't think. And then in season four, he comes back with Asteroid M, but even then, he's trying to, like, get away and not be a bad guy, and he's betrayed by Cortez. You know what I mean? He's not, like...
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, for years, he's much more a dangerous, like, violent psychopath.
Yeah.
And, like, a scary villain for the X-Men to fight. Like, they... Most of their hours in the Danger Room is mainly about preparing for Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they confront him at, like, their most, like... on point and alert, he always manages, well, not always, but he like often manages to like basically nearly kill them.
Right.
And because he's like that fierce and deadly.
Yeah.
So there's an element of Magneto that the show never like tapped into that much. And the movies definitely don't go into it really that much either. It's like.
Because the humanistic side of him is more powerful as like a storytelling device.
It
exactly. is. Because it's like for Magneto, you know, you can kind of build this world around him where you imagine. In Magneto's off time, when he's not doing
yeah.
anything like to mess with the X-Men or whatever,
when he's combing his luxurious white hair,
you know what I mean? Like you could
pumping those quads and
right,
triceps,
right? You could imagine him like living a life like any other person, where he's like, you know, trying to romance some woman or like buy a vacation house or like you
the
know,
adventures
whatever.
Of Magneto are awesome. Like off screen.
Yeah.
I just remember in one of my readings of one of the like hundreds of X-Men comics I've read,
uh-huh.
one like panel that always sticks out to me, I don't even remember the context, but he's fighting some kind of like Nazi scientist or something, like a Joseph Mengele type or some
mm-hmm.
kind of like, you know, maybe a fake Nazi scientist. And he's at the end, he like beats him and he steals all his Nazi gold. And you see Magneto like flying away with it, like a a tractor trailer size amount of gold, like, flying behind him, like an enormous cube of gold in the sky. It's all split up into bars, but it's stacked in, like, an enormous cube. Uh-huh. He's like, this will serve me well. Like, that's what Magneto's up to. Like, it was like, I love that. Like I said, I don't even remember the issue or the context, but I just love that scene. It's like finally showing the supervillain like where he gets his money from. Maybe.
Yeah. Right. That's, yeah.
And it was like a cool way he got his money. He took it from a fucking Nazi who, you know, he doesn't deserve that money. Like, uh-huh. You know, Magneto's relinquishing it for his own, you know, more deserved ends than right. I mean, not, he's still bad, but he has more of a claim to that Nazi gold than the Nazi does, obviously. So anyway, that, you know.
Anyway, I mean is like other villains, you know, you can't really imagine like what their home life is like or like what other business they're really up to.
He's a real maniac. Like, yeah. I mean, that's what's interesting about him. He's like super obsessed. He's like as obsessed in his hatred as Professor X is in his like commitment to peace. So yeah. It's like studying contrasts. But like I said, if I was, like, the MCU is going to launch with the X-Men in a few years, right? Mm-hmm. If I was setting up Magneto, I'd have all those elements of the humanism, mm-hmm. but I'd tease them much more sparingly. I'd make him the much more violent psychopath in the first several movies, however you're introducing him, mm-hmm. or even if it's just one movie, make him such a super dangerous terrorist. And then, like, over time...
Explain his backstory a little
explain
more.
Explain the backstory more and get into the human side and maybe flip him to the good.
Yeah.
But, like, have it be much more well-earned,
mm-hmm.
and, like, spread it out over a much longer time and just have him be much scarier for a longer time. Because that, to me, sums up the experience of the comics.
Yeah.
Where why his evolution into, like, of a more neutral or good character... And he goes back to bad, too, a lot in the comics, too.
Yeah.
But, like, why it's, like, much more interesting and well-earned because he spent years being such a maniac.
Right.
To keep using that word. So, like, I'm saying, if you're going to do it in the movies, like, there's no need to make him, such a good guy quickly or so sympathetic right away.
Mm-hmm.
Just make him bad and dangerous and scary and then, like, just, like, you know, do that stuff way later.
Yeah.
And keep him in – and that, to me, that keeps him more interesting because, like – as we see in the show and in the movies, like, you can, there's a way where you could speed up that character arc too quickly,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, what are you doing with Magneto? He's like one of the coolest villains, and now he's like kind of like, he's not really a factor, he's just like kind of lame.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that when we talk about the Dark Phoenix trailer at the end of this episode.
Alright,
yeah,
so
let's carry on. So Jean Grey realizes that through some bullshit that Professor X's brainwaves are electromagnetic, and Magneto can boost his electromagnetic powers, boost his signal to reach Lilandra in the cosmos. He agrees to do this. He comes to the X-Mansion. Beast warns Magneto that, you know, if Professor X dies while you're doing this link, you're going to die too, or you will also be destroyed. So one last reference to destroying and not killing.
Yeah, death. Just had to up the stakes a little bit there for no real reason.
Right. And then, you know... basically, it works. So, and Professor X wakes up and he gets to say goodbye to the X-Men one last time.
Goodbye to each character. Every X-Men.
Which is great. Like, I thought this was fantastic. I was not expecting this scene.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of loved it. So I wrote down a quick summary of each character that he addresses.
Go for it.
So, I mean, I guess technically first he addresses Magneto and he says, like, you know, we're brothers, or, you know, I'm glad that we can, like, be together or something. I actually don't even remember what he said to Magneto, because I wasn't, like, I wasn't prepared to write down this litany. But then, it, like, only in retrospect, it seems, I think he said something to Magneto, too.
Uh-huh.
Okay, whatever. So, but first, he really addresses his morph, and he talks about, like, you're an X-Man who faced his fears, and, you know...
You made it back. Good job.
Yeah, good job. And this is all done through tears and everything.
Yeah, right.
And then Gambit, it's like, when will the scoundrel learn that he's actually a hero? Which was pretty touching,
uh-huh.
I thought. Jubilee, he says that you are the future, essentially. You are the hope of mutants going forward,
yep.
Which makes sense. She's young. Storm, he praises how beautiful and powerful she is and gentle and, you know, like a hurricane and like a calm breeze. And that he really treasures their friendship,
mm-hmm.
which, you know... I mean, that's all true.
Yeah.
But
it was a little less pointed than the goodbyes he said to everybody
else. He doesn't have anything specific to say to her.
At the same time, like, acknowledging their friendship kind of puts her on, like, a more level.
Right, yeah. You're right.
He elevates her. Makes her more of an equal to him than the others.
Right, good point. Okay, so that's good. Logan, he says, you are a loner, who has finally found a family mm-hmm. and love and stuff. So that was really touching. And that's true. You know, that's like the story of Wolverine, right? Yeah. Like, so that was good. Rogue, you know, he's like, you're someone who can't touch yet. You've touched us all. Uh-huh. So, that, yeah, that's sweet. Jean, he says, first in my heart, and despite all the crazy shit you've seen, and which you face with enormous courage, you're still like the same innocent person I first remember. Uh-huh. Weird that he says first in my heart, because
I know it reinforces that idea that she was his first student, which she says before, which we know is not true, but
it also reinforces the weird thing if you've read the first few X-Men comics from the 60s where he thinks to himself, I have a secret crush on this 16-year-old. Uh-huh. And he only brings self-doubt not because she's so young, but because he's her teacher. Right. And he can't like dare like betray the teacher-student bond. Or maybe he says, like, he's too busy. Also, he might have said, like, I'm too busy to pursue romance with uh-huh. her. And that was, like, also, like, the weird thing that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby established in those early issues, that pretty much every character had a crush on Jean Grey. Uh-huh. Like, Cyclops, clearly, Warren Angel, like, openly is dating her, tries to at the beginning. Hmm. Beast, like, tries to kiss her, like, really aggressively, I think, when they first meet. Hmm. And even Iceman, there might have been a moment or two where he's like, maybe he's like, wowza, she's pretty, you know, isn't she cute, like kind of thing. So I think maybe Iceman excluded, but like all the male characters are just like sort of like
ogling her.
Yeah, leering over her in close-ups, just the way Jack Kirby would draw those like male faces, just uh-huh. like their eyeballs lit up. So yeah, I mean, the weird... that was always like a weird factor for X-Men fans, is like Professor X is like weird... crushing on Jean Grey. Uh-huh. So that just made me think of that. For Beast, he quotes, I'm assuming an obscure line of Shakespeare. Yeah. I could have easily have looked this up. I decided not to. That could have been a running theme throughout the show where I could have explained and tracked down every quote that Beast says and attributed it to something. This was a podcast where we decided not to put in that kind of effort. Because some he does quote like directly. He's like Tennyson,
yeah,
or Shakespeare, or Sherlock Holmes. But he doesn't. He got increasingly more obscure, I think, as the show went on. Mm. He just outright says stuff that you're just supposed to like figure it out.
Yeah,
this was no exception. And then Scott very poignantly says, "You know, I'm like your father. I'm very proud of you, and you are like a son to me." Uh-huh. And Scott cries through his visor, which I always love seeing in the comics and the cartoons and movies. Him crying through the visor is a very like. You know, interesting uh-huh. Thing, considering he can't show his eyes.
Right.
So, he's about to die, but Lilandra shows up somehow, magically, across space and time, and she says that she put something on his brain, some kind of, like, thing.
Some yellow glowing thing yeah. on his forehead.
She's like, I can't, you know, I can only keep him alive in the Shi'ar Empire.
So we gotta go now.
Yeah,
bye.
Yeah. Maybe you'll see him again one day. And Professor X is starting to speak to the X-Men telepathically. He's like, "Yeah, my body may be gone, but my spirit will definitely live on. So I'm all right."
Yeah.
And that also themes of like the end of X-Men 3, where he's supposedly dead, and then he somehow comes back to life.
Right.
You know, his brain lives on. That's also a theme they've done in the comics several times too. I think where his body gets destroyed, but his brain like carries on. Mm. And I think that's going to be a theme we're going to see. People have really strongly speculated for Avengers 4. That Tony Stark will die mm-hmm. along with Captain America. Mm-hmm. But Robert Downey Jr. will continue to exist in the Marvel movies. They'll make him the new like sentient AI robot voice. Mm. And he'll be like a character that's just a voice. And so Robert Downey Jr. will come in and get to still quip a few lines. You know what I mean? You won't see him, but yeah. like his presence will always be there. Uh-huh. Which I think that's like everyone thinks it's going to happen. I think so too. I think that's a way to keep him in the movies without having him actually have to do work or witness him age to the point where...
Right, where it's no longer believable.
Yeah, right. So, that's the whole series. Hooray! So we made it through 5 seasons. We're going to talk about the X-Men Dark Phoenix trailer, but let's... before we do that, let's give some thank yous. You know, we have not prepared a list of thank yous. but first and foremost, we have to thank our fans and listeners, obviously. All of you on the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group and beyond, even those who don't join that just listen. We know you're out there.
Participants, listeners. Yeah. Yep. You guys are great.
We know.
It's been really fun getting to connect with everyone out there.
Yeah.
Even if it's a one-sided connection, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been you have been the most wonderful, bizarre aspect of doing the show, because we realize that for the most part, now it's not true of all our listeners, but most of them are around our age, grew up with the shows like we did, and typically share the same values and cultural touchstones.
Right.
Even if you're not American or not New Yorkers like we are, it's something about uniting in childhood about the X-Men show and series.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be able to connect to and talk to our generation, it was just like... when we first like started hearing from our fans, it was really reassuring and nice and relaxing.
And surprising.
Yeah, like it's not like we got, you know, when you put yourself out there in some kind of public forum, be it a podcast or a video show, like whatever, you're probably going to get a lot of like trolls and hate and stuff. And we just really haven't gotten that at all. We've just mostly
that's been pretty minimal. Everything's really just been like positive and
like relaxed. Like
fun,
yeah.
And nice.
So, you know, we feel good about that. We really attribute to all of you cool motherfuckers out there. And just, we can't thank you enough. And we're not really going anywhere. We're going to carry on with the show. And I'm sure most of you are going to carry on listening, hopefully. So it's not like a goodbye, but it's a really sincere thank you as we've done all these episodes. I sprung this thank you portion here on Sonya right now. We did not talk about it at all. So we wrote nothing and prepared nothing.
Are you legitimizing the name graduation day right now?
No, I'm not. I'm long past that theme. But really, thank you to everybody that's listened and sent us messages on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, email.
Or if you're just downloading and listening, that's awesome.
Yeah,
thank you.
Really. Thanks. And stay with us. We're going to keep going. It's given us a lot of confidence to keep doing other stuff. Also, thank you to all the guests we've had on the show, be they close personal friends, acquaintances that we've known that just wanted to be on the show. A very special thank you to Eric and Julia Leewald, our truly most amazing special guests, mm-hmm. who came on in season one when this was barely a thing.
Yeah, really.
And let loose all the secrets that we wanted to know before previously on X-Men, their book, which everyone should get, was released. They let us in on a lot of inside information,
mm-hmm.
Like the canceled Jean Grey pregnancy, among other things.
Yeah.
They were so gracious and
they're
nice.
They're the coolest.
Yeah, they were really fantastic. And they sent us, like, you know, we posted it on Facebook. Like, they sent us a really awesome, like, thank you care package in the mail. And they were just wonderful. And really, thank you to them. And thank you to everyone who's appeared on the show as a special guest as well. We know who you are. We love you. Thank you so much. We hope to hear from you again going forward in the future. Too many names to name right now, but really, thank you to helping us as well. That's all I have for the thank yous anyway. Before we say goodbye for this episode, let's talk briefly about the X-Men Dark Phoenix trailer.
All right.
So
Zack Snyder music, Zack Snyder lighting.
Really? Zack Snyder?
You know what I mean?
I don't think he's not the reference point. I think, you know, Bryan Singer, light ripoff,
fine.
You know, because it's who's the guy that's behind this? Kinberg? Forget his first name. Simon Kinberg.
Know.
Yeah, he's his first time director. He's written some X-Men movies, I think, including X-Men Last Stand. So this is like the...
It's all so serious.
Yeah, this is the...
Lighten up.
Well, I don't know. Don't do Dark Phoenix. How about that? Like, you tried once, you messed it up. Let Marvel fix that in the future. That's my first biggest criticism. Why do you have to do the Phoenix Saga again? You're rebooting the same storyline. There's so many X-Men storylines.
I know. Well, it's a famous storyline. And like when I say lighten up, I don't mean that I want it to be jokey Guardians of the Galaxy or anything like that, but just like the slowed down,
right.
angsty music.
There's a funness with the X-Men that is not expressed
through
this trailer.
The tone of it is like not right for me.
Yeah, I agree.
But...
I mean, we're right back with the new young cast again.
Yeah.
With what's her name from Game of Thrones?
Sophie Turner.
Yeah, Sophie Turner.
I hear a lot of criticism of her as Jean Grey.
Yeah, she's fine.
Don't like her. I don't know. I feel the same way. She's fine.
She hasn't done enough to offend me in X-Men Apocalypse as a character or an actress.
They didn't give her a lot to do.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not like there's any reason to hate her or any of the actors or characters, really. You know, the common... I don't know. Like the common criticism online has been that it's basically a redo of the X-Men Last Stand movie, but not that much different.
Shifted focus or something.
Slightly different. Where it's not so much about. It's not going to be about the Shi'ar Empire. It's not going to be about the M'Kron Crystal. It's not going to be about Jean Grey's green and red outfits. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like this weird character study of a character whose mutant powers have overwhelmed her. Mm-hmm. And how can she possibly control them?
Yeah.
And, you know, she's changing and she's full of rage and fury. And, you know, it's like that kind of thing. And it's not what the fans want, I don't think. It's missing the point of what the Dark Phoenix or the Phoenix Saga is all about.
You know, not even the Phoenix Saga in general. It just seems like, after watching the entire run of
cartoons,
X-Men cartoons again, it's like we keep coming back to this point of like one of the main reasons that it's great is because there's strong moral standing with it. And it seems like a missed opportunity to me. Not that it has to be heavy-handed or anything like that, but like we are in like trying moral times right now that could really use like some kind of reinforcement or something.
I'm liking this take.
Like for like the greater good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like,
you don't think the Dark Phoenix is
so
a
far
story
like
that's a platform for that?
So far, I really haven't seen any like pop culture stuff coming out that reinforces that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think long and hard about that.
I mean, Black Panther, arguably.
Yeah, but not really.
Yeah, right.
I'd have to think about that.
But, like, that's the point of the X-Men, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of the big points, at least, of the cartoon series, is that they stand for good and uniting people in a divisive time and rising up from repression. You're right. So those themes don't seem to be at play in this trailer. It's just, like, seems like a Jean Grey character study, which is not that interesting at this time, I think, right, in, like, our society and culture.
Yeah.
Also, I'll reiterate some things I tweeted and put on the Facebook group. I'm annoyed that Cyclops' visor is silver instead of gold. Like, I'm tired of the silver visor. It's like, enough already. And that's the stupidest nitpick ever. And also, what was my other dumb nitpick? Oh, it wasn't so dumb. I could tell from this trailer that Storm again looks pushed in the margins of the story.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on. Like, give me some serious Storm already. Why is she like a side character?
Yeah.
So, and that seems like all the characters seem like dumb side characters, you know. Oh, we mentioned it before. Again, the return of, like, vague Magneto.
Yeah.
He seems to be on Genosha Island in, like, a ragtag village, much like in this cartoon we just watched, saying some vaguely weird things. Like, the one line they gave him in the trailer was, like, almost like a burn on the whole movie, it seemed. It's like, oh, Charles, you give a speech to inspire people, but it turns out to be boring and nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's like, I have a feeling that this is what this movie's going to be. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem good. It seems like the whole movie's about Professor X being tortured to the fact that he didn't wipe out Jean Grey's mind after she killed her parents as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, the whole movie is an attack on his shady psychology that he does.
It's just a shame. I mean, I just wish this movie would never come out. By the way, the trailer says it's coming out on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day.
No, they pushed it back again.
Yeah, they pushed it back again. Yeah, yeah. To June 7th.
Yeah.
So that might be a sign that Marvel might be, or Disney in this case, they might be trying to bury this movie. Maybe it'll never get released.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the case, because I don't want them to ruin the Phoenix Saga. I would like to see it done correctly one day. I don't need to see it in 2 years, like with a rebooted MCU.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in 10 years, I'd like to see it again. But it's going to be harder for them to do the Phoenix Saga correctly when it's already been done twice poorly. You know, why go down that path? It's just going to be, like, I don't think they'll ever do it, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't if the movie never comes out in theaters, which I think it's going to come out in theaters, if it never does come out, it will come out on the Disney streaming service, probably, some, like, weird video-on-demand release. We'll get to see it one day. There's probably some contractual thing with all the actors where the movie has to be released. Like, I don't know how the contracts work, but I have a feeling it's not something that Disney can just say, yeah, we're not releasing this. We're just going to swallow the $180 million production budget and just say forget it. I don't know. It just doesn't look good. Some people are more excited than others. We shall see.
I mean, that all said, we're going to watch this movie.
Well, we kind of have to.
No, we don't have to, but we're going to. We could take a stand and just say, like, we're not into it, but we're not going to do that if I know us. So
yeah.
We're going to pay our money at the movie theater.
I'm curious. Even if it's bad, I'm curious to see it, I guess.
See?
Yeah. Well, right. They have my money, so I guess it's kind of a joke that we're even being, like, poo-pooing it.
Right. Why are we?
All right, so anyway, that's all I have to say about that. I want to... So the series has ended. It doesn't mean that our show is ending.
That's right. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
X-Fans.
We might be back next week. We might not be. We might have a week or two off here. I have no idea. The next thing I think we're going to do is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Movies, yeah.
So stay tuned for that. That should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to do that right away. I don't know. Maybe we will if we have time. So stay tuned for that. We're going to do Spider-Man, the animated series, coming forward. So there'll be plenty more content.
And some other treats.
And some other treats. We've dropped hints about what those might be along the way, either on Facebook or even on the show. I don't remember. So we're not going anywhere. But again, really thank you for making it all the way through the original run of the X-Men animated series. One of my all-time favorite shows, obviously, if you haven't picked up on it by now. It was really fun to watch and analyze every episode with everyone listening.
Yep.
But join us on the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson and rate and review the podcast 5 stars. Sonia, any final words on the final X-Men animated series episode of the X-Men Task Podcast?
No, that's it.
Okay, no final words. Good night, everybody.
Goodbye.